This is the To The Point podcast. Together with our ERISA attorney, we'll explore key Affordable Care Act and trending compliance topics, all in 15 minutes or less. Now here's our host, Sarah Gillespie.
Hello, I'm Sarah Gillespie. I'm the Compliance Director at Lipscomb & Pitts, and welcome to our To The Point podcast. I am here with Stacey Barrow of Marathis Barrow Weatherhead & Lent. Hey, Stacey, how are you today?
Good, Sarah. How are you?
I am great. Well, today we wanted to talk about the Better Care Reconciliation Act. I know if you've listened to our podcast before, we shared some information on the House proposed bill, which was the American Healthcare Act. And this is the Better Care Reconciliation Act, which is the Senate's proposal. There are a few differences from the House bill, and we wanted to just let Stacey unpack that for us a little bit and also to talk about the future of it and where we think things might go next. So, Stacey, what can you tell us about the Better Care Reconciliation Act?
Sure. So as you mentioned, that's the Senate version of the ACA repeal and replace legislation. The Senate first released their draft on June 22nd, and then they updated it shortly thereafter. And then most recently, a week ago today, actually July 13th, they released another updated discussion draft of that Better Care Reconciliation Act. And it looked like, well, it actually, in fact, Mitch McConnell ended up asking Congress to delay their August recess to try to get the deal done on healthcare reform. And they were pretty close to not having it voted on. They could only lose really two senators before it became an issue procedurally to even get the bill to the floor for a vote. And so after the most recent discussion draft was released, July 13th, the Congressional Budget Office hadn't scored it at that point. But there were a couple more defections from Senate Republicans where it seemed pretty clear that at least four or five senators just simply were not going to support the BCRA in its current form. And so they didn't even have enough votes procedurally to start the process and to vote on it. So it was effectively pulled over the last few days, earlier this week, we're still waiting to see exactly how the dust settles and what's going to happen with the BCRA in the future. If you've been following President Trump on it, he's changed his position several times. You know, when it first failed to pass or be voted on, he said, you know, we'll let the ACA fall on its own. And then he kind of walked that back a little bit. And then he broached the idea of, well, maybe we'll just repeal the ACA and replace it with nothing. And we'll take the next couple of years. We'll phase it out. We'll take the next couple of years to find the solution. That also very quickly looked like it's going to be an untenable solution. Same four or five senators also said they would not support a measure to simply repeal the entire ACA. So where we are right now is a bit of a hiatus. We may not see the Better Care Reconciliation Act voted on, at least in the near future, but it doesn't mean that Congress and the Senate Republicans and members of the House haven't stopped trying to make changes to the ACA. I think maybe as part of tax reform, you might see them go after some of the ACA taxes they were unable to repeal as part of the failed BCRA effort, the taxes they failed to repeal as part of the BCRA effort. But that's where we are right now. So, as we've been doing, we'll be drafting alerts on this, keeping Lipscomb and Pitts clients updated. Once the dust settles, we'll release another alert with our thoughts as to what's going to happen for the next few weeks. And then if you'd like, I can go through a real quick review of some of the high points of that BCRA, Sarah.
Yeah, let's do that, just because I knew there were a few differences from the AHCA.
Yeah, so I think we talked before a little bit about the AHCA and some of the changes it made to the Affordable Care Act. And there was one provision in particular that I thought was problematic and was going to be difficult to overcome once the bill got to the Senate. And that change was to take the ACA's individual mandate, which, as you know, the penalties are paid over to the federal government, and change that mandate into a 30% surcharge on individuals who had a gap in coverage of at least 63 days. They'd have a 30% surcharge on premiums in the individual market for their first 12 months of coverage following a gap. And so that changed the recipient of the penalty payment from the federal government to the insurance companies. So it's kind of a reframing of the individual mandate. And the way that that provision worked really wasn't what we call reconciliation ready. It wasn't proper for or to be included in a reconciliation bill because it doesn't directly affect federal spending. And so we knew that provision was going to be very problematic. And without an individual mandate, you know, you really can't have some of these other provisions like no annual limits and no pre-existing condition exclusions. So they knew they had to have some kind of individual mandate. When the Senate first released their BCRA draft at the end of June, it didn't include any individual mandate. I think they understood they had to get rid of the 30% surcharge, and they didn't put any individual mandate in it. And it, again, was fairly roundly criticized as being disruptive to the insurance markets, you know, if you're going to maintain those other rules for pre-existing condition exclusions. So they updated their June draft in July, and they replaced the 30% surcharge with a 6-month waiting period for people that had a gap in coverage. So if you had a gap in coverage of 63 or more days and you went to purchase a plan in the individual market, you would have a 6-month wait. And that's kind of the BCRA's version of an individual mandate. But, you know, obviously for a healthcare bill, that's kind of an absurd provision. You know, someone that has a cancer diagnosis, you know, the 6-month wait is going to be a death sentence. So it does show how I think out of touch Washington was on this issue. A lot of the provisions here really didn't quite resemble your traditional, you know, health bill. So that's one of the major differences under the BCRA. And then other things that they didn't cut from the ACA were the net investment income tax and the Medicare payroll tax, which are both taxes on high earners. And I think we're going to see that come back again as part of tax reform. I think they're going to look to get rid of the net investment income tax as part of the tax reform movement.
And speaking of taxes, I know that one thing that we have been very in tune with and watching for was whether they were going to change anything in regards to the employer taxation of health plans. And so the good news for employers was that the, you know, the versions of the BCRA that were released did not touch that, did not change that for employers. I think you may, you know, have something to say about this, but I feel like that's always on the back burner as an option. But do you have any thoughts or comments on that? Because employers certainly have concerns about that.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right that the BCRA did not include any type of a provision capping the tax exclusion for employer-provided health insurance. And a lot of employers were very concerned that that exclusion might be capped or possibly even removed as a way to pay for some of the other tax cuts in the bill. And you're right that the tax exclusion for employer-provided coverage is something that both parties, Democrats and Republicans, have quietly wanted to chip away at over the year, simply because it's such a big, you know, it would be such a big revenue raiser for the government to get rid of that exclusion. And obviously, it would just make it less appetizing for employers to offer group health plan coverage and employees to take it if they were going to be taxed on the value of that coverage. So hopefully we won't see that again as part of tax reform.
Right. And we'll keep that as an item that we watch as well. Okay, well, let's talk about ACA reporting. So my understanding is that these proposed bills, although they reduced the penalties for employers associated with the employer mandate to zero, there was no elimination of the requirement to report to the IRS on, you know, which employees have been offered coverage and affordability of that coverage and minimum value and so on. And I had heard that in part that may have remained in place even if the BCRA had passed to help the IRS out in their understanding of who is actually eligible for subsidies that were applied for under the exchange. So can you tell us a little bit about that? And then, you know, obviously, since this is tabled, employer reporting is still something that will have to be done. But just any thoughts or comments on that topic?
Yes, and you're right that the BCRA eliminates the employer mandate back to January 1 of 2016. It doesn't directly eliminate the reporting requirements under Section 6056 of the code. Those are those 1095C forms you send out if you're a large employer. And for the reason you mentioned, Sarah, is that the subsidies for premiums on the exchange, they get phased out under these bills. And so the government still needs to administer that premium tax credit program. And so they would still need the employer reporting for several years, even if the bill were to pass. Now, there are other bills floating around out there. There's a big appropriations bill that's hanging out there right now. And there are two provisions in there that are related to the ACA. One of them is a complete repeal of the individual mandate. It's 5000A of the Internal Revenue Code. You can look for that in the appropriations bill, and you'll see that they eliminate the individual mandate as part of the appropriations bill. And they also eliminate the provider reporting, Section 6055, which is done by insurance carriers and self-insured plans. And that's the reporting that goes to the government to say whether or not you have coverage so that they know whether a penalty is owed under the individual mandate. So both of those are, I think, have a pretty big effect on folks, but we don't know yet if they're going to make it through to the final appropriations bill. I tend to think they're going to get struck, but now that the health care reform bill is you know, on life support at very best, I think in the future, in the next, you know, 4 to 6 months, the kinds of changes we'll see to health care reform will be more piecemeal. They'll be part of other bills like this appropriation bill. And maybe they'll make some changes for the good. Maybe they'll ease the burden on employers a little bit. And we'll just have to see what approach they take.
Interesting. Okay. And as always, we'll keep our clients up to date with the latest information as it becomes available. So, Stacy, thanks so much for breaking this down for us. I think it's really helpful to understand the Better Care Reconciliation Act, at least as it's currently proposed. And we understand that it's tabled for now, but like you said, we'll probably see a few things popping up here and there, perhaps in other bills. And it's important for our employers to understand that the ACA reporting is still a requirement as of now. So thanks for joining us for this podcast. We hope you found the information helpful. Please refer to any of our other podcast topics on anything else we can help you with. And if there's something specific you'd like to hear about, please email me at sarahg@lpinsurance.com. Thanks so much.